When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi friends, and welcome back to another episode of Open House, a fresh, fun, and real podcast where I, Louise Rumble, invite you inside the therapy room with me to learn from some of the very best psychologists, therapists, and sex and intimacy coaches that I have found. No topic is off the table, no question too juicy, and no experience too shameful. At Open House, everyone is welcome. And we're on a mission to develop a new mental health experience for all, because we believe that true happiness is coming home to yourself under the layers and layers of you that society has told you to be. As ever, please remember that this podcast is for entertainment purposes only, and you should always seek professional medical help when necessary. Now, let's get into it, and I'll see you on the other side. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Open House podcast with me, Louise Rumble, and the incredible Dr. Terry Mack, who is back with us again today to follow on from our toxic relationships episode that we just launched. That was a really, really important episode as we started to dig into the nuances around how you can really love someone, you can really care for someone, and it can mean that you can really make excuses for painful, disrespectful, or out of bounds behavior. Today's episode is going to be a follow-on to that one. We are going to run you through signs that you might be in a toxic partnership or have dynamics of toxicity to your partnership that you don't actually realize. These might get swept under the rug. They might be small moments in comparison to the good times. You might make excuses for their behavior because it happens infrequently. Whatever it is, if there is anything on this list today, I know that Dr. Terry is going to tell you that it's very, very important that you take note of it. So yeah, let's start with that, the concept of this list that you've put together.
Yes, what I want people to know is that if you are experiencing any of these signs that we're going to go through on this list, it is a huge red flag and potentially dangerous for your mental health, for your self-esteem, and for some of them, even your physical health and well-being. But like we talked about it in a previous episode on toxic relationships, they're not all bad all the time, but there is a threshold. So if you experience any of these things, it means you're probably in a toxic relationship or an abusive relationship.
Yeah. And if you haven't already listened to the last episode that we did on this, please go back and listen to that, because we're not going to go into today why we overlook these, why we justify them. But that is such an important piece of the puzzle. So go and listen to that episode, then come back to this one if you haven't already listened to it. But without further ado, such a British phrase, let's get into the list. There is so much in this list. I think we just need to dive in. So I'd love it if you could run us through these signs that you might be in a toxic relationship, but you just might not realize it.
The first sign that you might be in a toxic relationship and may not realize it is that you are always identified as the problem, and your partner never takes accountability for issues, for problems in the relationship. You start feeling like it's all my fault. And your partner agrees.
Yeah, and we've all been there, right? Someone blows up at us, someone gets upset at us, and we instantly go to, oh my God, I did this. I'm such a bad person. You just want to alleviate the pain and the upset that they're going through. And by doing that, you subconsciously take it on as your own responsibility. I guess my question for you is, if this is happening, if there is a conflict and you are automatically taking it on as your responsibility, what does that mean?
Well, it could mean that this is a result of this relationship, that you've been in this relationship long enough that this dynamic is one that you've become accustomed to. But it could also mean, and probably both are true, that you're vulnerable to this way of thinking, that you have this empathy for other people. You tend to take on responsibility for other people's feelings, and you're quick to judge yourself, to feel ashamed of yourself, and to not have good boundaries and really understand the boundary between, okay, what's mine and what's theirs.
Yeah, and I think we'll get into on another episode the wounds that can make you susceptible to a toxic relationship, because I think that they can come from so many different places. It can come from your unconscious attraction, your involuntary attraction, the model of love you experienced in childhood, the lack of self-esteem. There's so many different angles to it. We're not going to get into that today, but I definitely think that that's another episode or potentially even a course, because to be able to identify those weak spots and to understand where they're coming from, that is so, so important. It's really the first stage to ensuring that you never end up in a toxic relationship ever again. Because if you understand the cycle, you can break the cycle. Otherwise, you're just going in with blindfolds on, repeating the cycles that you've always repeated, right?
Exactly. You really have to understand the root of your core wounds and what they are and those old beliefs that you're carrying around in order to understand why you keep creating these same dynamics in your relationships.
You also said there that maybe your toxic partner or your partner just never, ever takes accountability. Can you tell me what that looks like in the context of a disagreement, a conflict, an argument, or something like that? Is it gaslighting? Is it pushing it back on you? I know there's loads of ways, but what might that look like?
Yeah, there's lots of different ways this can look. In general, it means they never own up to the fact that they screwed up, that they had an impact on you, that they caused an issue. They never acknowledge their part of a dynamic. They're always pointing the finger at you. Sometimes even when they've had bad behavior, they'll blame you for it. Well, I did this because you did this. So lack of accountability is a huge red flag. Somebody who's accountable will say, you know what? Yeah, I can understand how that made you feel that way. I can understand why I shouldn't have done that. Or even just simply, yeah, I screwed up. I'm really sorry.
Yeah, I think that piece around accountability is like a real reflection that you're becoming a healthier person. Because I think when I was younger, so to speak, when I was like in my 20s or early 20s, if we had conflict, I would always bat it back to them. It would always be a you problem, never a me problem. Or I'd justify why I did that or why they did that, so I did this. Now, the first thing I will do is I will take a breath. I will take a hot minute. I will self-regulate. I will acknowledge what the pain point is. And I will then always lead with a conscious, I acknowledge this happened. I acknowledge that it made you feel this way. And I acknowledge that I could have done this differently. That for me feels like it's been a really healthy three-part framework to acknowledging and accounting. That's not the right term. I do no accounting in my whole entire life. Accountability is what I do though. So yeah, I love that. I think that's so important. And I think just to wrap up that first point, if your partner never ever takes accountability, if they never even acknowledge that they've done something that might have caused you discomfort, it's not a good sign. Now, point two.
Sign number two that you might be in a toxic relationship without realizing it is that you take on punishment from your partner because you believe that you caused their wounds. That if they're upset or they're hurt or they're angry, you believe it's actually your fault. And in a healthy relationship, we all have wounds and they can be acknowledged, they can be seen, but neither person takes on responsibility for the other person's wounds, and neither person is blamed for the other person's wounds or feelings. So if you're in a toxic relationship, you actually feel like, oh, I'm really hurting this person. I'm horrible. I'm a terrible person. And you accept whatever form of punishment you may be receiving. And we'll talk about what punishment is in a following point.
Oh, that makes me so sad to think that people will be doing that. And I know that that also used to be me. And for me, it ties back to point one, is that you can take accountability that there might have been an objective action or something that you did that might have hurt someone. But I think that is where it has to stop there. It might be that there's something you need to take accountability for, but it might also be that actually what you did was fine. It was within the realm of a healthy person, a healthy partnership, because you are allowed to set your boundary. You are allowed to say no. You are allowed to not want to do things that they want you to do. You're allowed to push back on something. You have free will. You have consent. You have all of these things. I think it's just really important to acknowledge that sometimes you can get so swept up in just because you didn't do what they wanted you to do, or you didn't say what they wanted you to say, or you didn't react in the way that they wanted you to, that it's like a you problem. But the truth is it is not.
Yes. I always tell people, if you upset somebody or somebody is upset by something you did, that doesn't necessarily mean you did anything wrong. And for some of us, those two things are together. Always like paired together. And if you're in a toxic or abusive relationship, they're always going to be paired together. If your partner's upset, you did something wrong. And that is not true.
That is so important, isn't it? That A plus B equals C is that when you're in a toxic relationship, if your partner is upset, you have done something wrong. That equals the conflict. That is so important. Now, point three, let's get into it.
The third sign that you may be in a toxic relationship without realizing it is if your partner has unpredictable mood swings or anger issues, or when they're drinking or taking drugs, they have a different personality. And so for any of these reasons, you feel like you're walking around on eggshells, and you got to be really careful so you don't upset them or trigger them. That is not okay, and it's not healthy. In a healthy relationship, you can speak your truth. You can be yourself and trust that everything's going to be okay.
And just to build on that, you can also share your truth whenever you want to. I mean, sure, it might be good to say, hi, I'd love to talk to you about something. Is now a good time? Can we talk this evening? Is it better if we talk this weekend? In a toxic relationship, it feels like there is never, ever a good time. You also feel like you never, ever want to detract from the good times, because the good times, you literally cherish them. You're like, oh my God, we're good. Everything's good. I love him. I love her so much. You are so scared of bringing up that cycle. Because the thing is, what I've learned from now being in a healthy relationship is that even if I was to say to my partner, like, oh, I want to talk about this, I think you did this and it made me feel this, it would not ruin the day, the weekend, the week, the month. We literally would just have that conversation and we'd park it and we would just get back on with life. When you are in a toxic relationship, when you are treading on eggshells, it feels like that discussion, it's a landslide, it's an avalanche. They're never small. They just explode and they just pick up more and more snow as it goes down like the side of the mountain, and it then starts just like taking everything out, and then all the wounds and all the triggers, and it just becomes something so big. And I think that's like another thing for me, is that if you are in a relationship where that is what the conflict looks like, if you try to bring up something small and it turns into an avalanche, you did this, you did that, you made me feel this, it's not my fault that you did this, and throwing the whole kitchen sink at it, that for me is another sign of a toxic relationship, because conflict should be calm. I never understood that conflict could be calm. Do you think that's fair?
Absolutely. And even if voices are raised or there's intensity in your voice, it's the language and the body language that is so important. Again, is it respectful? So I totally agree with that. And actually, the fourth sign that you might be in a toxic relationship without realizing it is that when you share your truth and feelings, if your partner doesn't like your truth or your feelings, it leads to a huge disconnect or fight or disruption or rupture. It, like that avalanche you're talking about. Like you said, in a healthy relationship, you can share your truth anytime. There's always room and space for that. In a toxic or abusive relationship, if your partner doesn't like your truth or your feelings, it leads to a huge explosion, fight, or disconnect. And that is not okay.
Yeah, that's so important. And you're right. I think it is important to understand that you can also get hot and heated in conflict. You can feel frustrated. Let's be honest, your nervous system is dysregulated. There will be a lot of things coming up for you. But again, I think it ties back into what we spoke about in the last episode is, are you being angry whilst being respectful? You can be angry or frustrated without actively demeaning, criticizing, being aggressive, being disrespectful. It doesn't mean you have to sit there calmly meditating whilst having your conflict. Like, yeah, it's going to get hot and heavy for the most part, but I guess it's really about like how you both treat the other person in those moments of conflict. Is that right?
Yeah, it comes down to respect. So even if your voice is louder than normal or there's more intensity there, more feeling, is there respect? Is there ownership? Those are the two most important things, right? Accountability and respect. And disagreement. Can you even disagree and it doesn't lead to a huge disruption? So I always come back to that word respect, because that's really what we're talking about, or lack thereof. So the fifth sign that you might be in a toxic relationship without realizing it is if your partner objectifies other people, men or women, and focus on other people's appearance or your appearance, compares you to ideal beauty standards, compares you to other people, comments on other people's bodies, and criticizes your appearance. This is different than, you know, if you're concerned about somebody's health and you want them to maybe go to the gym with you or something like that. This is different. This is when you actually objectify or you feel objectified by your partner. They're commenting on the bodies of other people and saying, that's what I like. You should look more like that. Or holding you to a certain aesthetic standard because that's what they like. That is not okay.
I agree. That is not okay. I've actually got a really funny story here. But before we get into the story, truly, if my boyfriend said to me, I like this or you should do this, I would be out the door in literally 0.5 seconds. But I do actually have quite a funny story here, which I think comes down to the language barrier that we have between us. That when we were first dating, he made a comment that he didn't love. Like, basically, there's this type of dress called the A-line. I don't even really know what it is, but I think it's like goes out. Now, he made a comment that he didn't really like that type of dress. And I misunderstood what he said. And I thought he said he didn't like women that wore dresses. So I was thinking, is this man like the best man ever? Because there's no red flags by him, but this is the first red flag that like he's ever given me. Did I misunderstand? Anyway, so I'm out here wearing my sports bras and my baggy t-shirts and my sliders and my cycling shorts, blah, blah, blah. And I have these really cute dresses. And one day I was like, I never ever wear them here because they're tight and it's so hot. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to wear this dress. And then I thought to myself, oh, but my boyfriend doesn't like it when women wear dresses. And then I was like, fuck this. I'm going to wear the dress and I'm going to bring up the conversation with him. And I'm going to say, by the way, what you said a year ago, it's really stuck with me. So I put on this really cute dress and I came out and he was like, oh my God, you look so adorable. I love you so much. You look so sweet and pretty. And I was like, but I thought you hated women that wear dresses. His whole face went totally fucking blank. He was like, I would never say that. I was like, babe, you literally said that a year ago. He was like, I never said that. I just said that I really didn't like one cut of a specific dress. And then I was like, oh my God. And in that moment, I realized I had totally misunderstood what he said. And for the whole year, I was thinking, this man is like, I think he has like a secret red flag hidden under him. And the truth is, he was just like, I would never, ever say that. Who am I to tell you what to wear? Like, you look amazing in everything. And he just had a reason. It was like one teacher at school that used to tell him off all the time wore this specific type of dress. It was just so funny that when we actually started talking about it, I was like, oh my God, yeah, it isn't a red flag at all. And he actually green flagged me, which was to reaffirm and to reconfirm that he would never, ever tell me in a million years what he likes, what he didn't like, and what I should wear.
Oh my God, that is so funny. And I also just want to make the point. So he doesn't like A-line dresses. That doesn't mean you could never wear a freaking A-line dress.
Yes.
And I'm sure if you did, he'd be like, whatever. Right? You don't have to curate yourself based on somebody else's likes and dislikes. So I'm so happy you brought that up.
That is so true, because I would never actually wear an A-line dress. But okay, I've got another good example here. So I was dating a guy a while ago and I was big into socks and sliders era of my life. Like, I'm still in that era. I love a baggy t-shirt, some cycling shorts, socks and sliders. I spent a lot of time in New York. You can wear that whatever you want there. And I remember I was wearing it in London. And this guy said to me, like, what the fuck are you wearing? You look so stupid. He didn't say it so aggressively, but he was like, you look so stupid. And not one part of me ever thought, I'm going to stop wearing socks and sliders because of the opinion of someone else. I thought, I love wearing socks and sliders. It's comfortable. It's fun. It's a vibe. I love it. And I'm never, ever going to change what I like for someone else. So I love that point. If you want to wear the A-line dress, if you want to wear the socks and sliders, don't you dare ever not wear those things just because someone, man or woman, commented that they didn't like them. Because that is the first sign of you changing yourself for someone else, being manipulated or being controlled. Am I right?
Definitely. I'm going to add one in here. Yeah. And I will even say the sixth sign that you're in a toxic relationship and you may not know it is that your partner gets angry with you if you wear something they don't like or you're not meeting their standards of aesthetics or appearance. This can start out innocently where you're like, okay, he or she doesn't like that. I'm not going to wear it. But this is a subtle form of grooming and manipulation. I see people starting to slowly change themselves to be what their partner wants them to be. And they lose themselves. They lose themselves. And that's dangerous.
And I think this concept of losing yourself, we spoke about it at the end of last episode, was this concept of self-trust, like the pillar of our truth within us. And I think that in today's society, that can be so wobbly. We didn't, for many of us, grow up in families where we were mirrored and we were communicated with about our worth and the things that are great about us and all of these things. And I think if you do have a partner that is saying or making these comments to you and they are hitting home, i.e. you're thinking, should I get filler? Should I get my lips done? Should I get Botox? Should I go to the gym more? Should I change the way I work out? Should I change the way I dress? I think that is really, really like a very interesting wake-up call to being like, okay, there is something going on deeper below the surface here, because everything is always so multifaceted. You have the wounds of the person that is trying to groom you, to control you, to manipulate you. You also have your own wounds that make you susceptible to thinking, yeah, actually, I would look better if I went and did that, or if I wore this instead, or if I stopped wearing that, or if I went and got filler. So I think if you are in therapy and you're feeling susceptible to these comments from a partner, go and explore it, not just from their perspective, though, also from your perspective. And if you're not in therapy, hopefully we can do something on this, like a course or something to take you deeper in the next few months.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that we're making this point that if you are finding yourself starting to doubt yourself, question your worth, question your own appearance, it's important to understand it's not just about the person you're with. It's about the wounds within you that are making you vulnerable and susceptible to this type of treatment. And that's really what you have to look at so you can fortify yourself and get healthier so you will not ever be attracted to this type of behavior or have trouble setting boundaries against it in the future. Okay, the seventh sign that you're in a toxic relationship and may not even realize it is if your partner punishes you when they're upset with you or when you screw up in their eyes. This could be things like the silent treatment, belittling you, criticizing you, retaliating, taking things away, or saying, I'm not going to do this with you. So any type of punishment is a sign that you are in a toxic relationship.
I think this one's really interesting because it feels like there's like a fine line between you're allowed to be hurt and upset and you're allowed to take a little bit of space, which could be considered silence, but it's a kind, proactive discussion around this. You know, I'm feeling really hurt right now. I'm feeling really triggered right now. I need a little time to process this. I'm going to take some time out. I need a day to myself. I need a couple of hours. I'm going to go on a walk. I want to talk with Bert, Brett, Mum, Dad, whoever it is that that person wants to talk with. But it's like doing it was communicating that ultimately I'm not punishing you. I'm not leaving you. I'm not doing this to scare you. We've all been in situations where someone will literally disappear after an argument and we have no idea where they've gone. It's so horrendous. It has us literally sat there like panicking to high heavens. So I think it's like, this is a very interesting point. And I also think it's about understanding and acknowledging that there are ways that you can navigate this healthily. You're allowed to take time and space after conflict or a rupture in trust, but it's about doing it again with respect, with communication, and just, yeah, providing the safety for yourself and the other person, obviously dependent on what the other person's done. But what do you think about that?
Yes, absolutely. And punishing is also about not letting it go. So let's say they take space, they come back, and they're still, it's like they're hammering you. They're hammering the point home, how awful you are, how insensitive you are, how selfish you are, how could you? And no matter, let's say you really did screw up in some way, you apologize, you take accountability, they will not move on. This is now ammunition that they will use against you over and over again. This should not happen in any relationship. When we screw up, of course, we have feelings about it. We talk about it. The other person hopefully takes accountability. But then there's forgiveness, there's grace, and we move on. If somebody can't move on from something that you've done, doesn't mean they should stay in a relationship with you and continue to beat you up. They should move on. But what I see is that people in toxic or abusive relationships continue to stay in these relationships and be a punching bag, verbally, sometimes physically, but verbally. They really are bombarded with these messages of how horrible they are. Sometimes for things they can't even control. Sometimes for things they didn't actually even do wrong. But because of the other person's feelings, they're punished in this way.
Yeah, I think this point around punishment is so important. And I think it ties back to the first two things we spoke about in the list, the wounds being triggered and everything being your fault. I think that this is kind of similar. Again, it's also acknowledging that you do not deserve to be punished and this is not all your fault. And like you said, yeah, if they are using that as ammunition against you, oh, that makes me feel tired and sad for the person that is in that kind of relationship now. If you are listening to this and you're in that kind of relationship, I want you to know that I want you to not lose sight of the truth here, which is that there are relationships out there. And annoyingly enough, I am in one of them, which is where you will never have something used against you as a form of ammunition or punishment, because you will work through a piece of conflict. It will bring you closer, or at least you will work through it and leave it there in the past, and then you will move on. Sometimes I think when you get stuck in these cycles, you don't understand or imagine how you could ever leave something in the past, particularly if you did something that hurt someone else. It ties back to point one and two. You feel like, oh, I did that and I just have to pay for it and I just have to work their trust back. That is not true. You shouldn't spend a year of your life working back to equilibrium, to balance, to ground zero. Yes, there are situations, infidelity being one, where there are active reparation steps that you need to be taking together as a couple. But outside of infidelity, I can't think of too many things where you would have to be going on a 6 to 12 month journey to rebuild something. Is anything coming to you outside of infidelity there?
Well, I'll say even with infidelity, it shouldn't be continuous punishment. Your partner may still have trust issues and there's rebuilding trust, but the punishment would be like over and over and over and over again, there's no movement. The other person working on letting it go, and if they can't, they decide I have to leave. The punishment is like the power thing. The toxic or abusive partner is going to cling on to one little thing that they can keep coming back to as a reason why you owe them, you are a horrible person, you've got to earn something back, they can't trust you, to keep you in the powerless position. So there's never any movement, and there is never any willingness or desire on their part to move past it.
It's fascinating to think that they're actually happy in that dynamic, despite the fact that all they ever do is tell you how unhappy they are in that dynamic and that you are the reason for that dynamic, but that there's no steps to reparation and healing and moving out of this space outside of punishment. That's really incredible. I've never thought of it like that.
Yeah. In their mind, now it's justification. They have a reason to treat you so poorly. And if you haven't worked on your own wounds, you're going to believe that. I deserve this. How could I screw up so badly? How could I hurt them so badly? Again, maybe you did. Maybe you did do something, but also maybe you didn't. But you're being brainwashed to believe that you did do something wrong.
Or maybe you did, but that as a healthy couple, you should be able to acknowledge it, discuss it, and move forward from it. I think that's really important.
Exactly. What the point here is, punishment, no matter what happens in the relationship, should never be there. Ever, ever, ever. If you want to punish your partner, if they want to punish you, you should leave the relationship instead, because you don't treat somebody you love like that, period. The eighth sign that you may be in a toxic relationship without realizing it is that your partner gaslights you. And gaslighting is a manipulation tactic where they deny reality and they make you question your own reality so that you lose trust in your own self, your own intuition, your own perceptions. So you could literally see something with your own eyes. You could see them texting somebody else. They're going to say, "I didn't do that. You're crazy." The message here is, you're crazy. That never happened. They're denying reality. Over time, this causes you to lose trust in yourself, which is very dangerous.
Yeah, we've never actually done an episode on gaslighting, which I'm surprised by. I mean, it's on our to-do list with 101 other things that we're always wanting to get to as well. So we will get to that at some point, because I think there's a danger that gaslighting as a term is just like so overused today. It's become a buzzword. People aren't understanding the reality of what it means, and like the behavioral patterns, and also the ties to personality disorders, the cycle of love bombing, et cetera, et cetera. So we will get into that at some point. But I think irrespective of whether someone sits on the emotionally immature end of the spectrum or the love bombing end of the spectrum, like if people are really invalidating your reality when you are trying to say, this is something I've experienced, and they just will not hold space for it, I think that is really, really important to understand that that is not the sign of a healthy relationship.
Exactly. And the term gaslighting, I don't know if we've talked about this on an episode before, but it comes from an old movie. And the story of the movie is that there is a woman who lives alone in a house. She has like gold and riches in her attic. So this man comes along and starts to romance her. He wants the money in her attic. So every night he starts to turn down the level of light in the gas lights. And then every night she'd be like, "Is it getting darker in here?" And he'd be like, "No, what are you talking about? It's not getting any darker." Every night he'd turn it down. She'd say, "Is it getting darker in here? I can hardly see." And he would deny, like, "No, what are you talking about?" And that's where the term gaslighting comes from. He was denying reality and she went crazy, and then he got the riches in the attic.
Whoa, that's crazy. I do actually think we've spoken about that on this podcast, but I think I totally forgot that story. It's crazy how these psychological terms are actually named after like very specific incidences. And now there are men and women all over the world actually gaslighting and being accused of gaslighting left, right, and center.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, the ninth sign that you might be in a toxic relationship without even realizing it is that there is a power dynamic. One person in the relationship is the decision maker and who gets to decide what is right and wrong in the relationship.
Yeah, that is interesting. And I'm going to build on that one step further as well, which is that you could probably also have a situation where you are both fighting to be that person, So for example, I'm thinking, does that apply to me and my old relationship? I mean, yes, my ex-boyfriend probably would have tried to have been the decider of what was right and what was wrong. But because I was very toxic at the time as well, I would be like, no, fuck you. That's not how it fucking is. It's like this. So it would then become this, like, me thinking that I could do this, him thinking that he could do that. I guess it applies to both dynamics. It could either be the one very strong decision-making party that they are in control, or it could be two people both kind of like fighting, not only fighting for that position, because I was never trying to say like, I am right. I was just trying to get him to see the truth of the situation. And by doing that, I had to fight back against him laying down the law. So then it becomes both of you just like fighting, trying, you trying to get them to see the truth. Like, I guess that's probably another point is like, I cannot tell you how many times I tried to get this man to see the truth of his behavior. Like literally A plus B equals C. You are doing this because of this, which equals this. The truth is I did this, which didn't warrant that because the truth was this. I would try to break it down to understand logically that what he was doing was wrong. But the truth is this man didn't work with logic. He was either like calm and at baseline, or he was dysregulated and abusive. Like when he was in that state, there was no logically talking him out of that.
Yeah. And I think that point relates to a couple others that we've already talked about. One, accountability. You were trying to get him to take accountability. Was never going to happen. And two, it's the one we just talked about, this power dynamic. You were just trying to have a voice and be heard. And a sign of a toxic relationship is that you don't have a voice. And no matter how hard you try, you are never heard or understood. And I often say to people, quit trying to have a reasonable conversation with an unreasonable person who doesn't want to understand you. I literally, in my 20s, in that toxic relationship I was telling you about, one weekend, I actually lost my voice. Because my boyfriend at the time felt I was, in quotes, making eyes at our waiter. And I spent the whole weekend begging and pleading and trying to convince him I wasn't. I don't care about anyone but you. But the truth was, he just wanted to punish me. He wanted me in that down position. I literally did not have a voice left at the end of the weekend. And guess what? I was still in the wrong in his eyes.
That is crazy. Because also, guess what? You probably also stayed in that relationship, which is why I say we're never judging anyone. Like, we have both been there. And this is really important that we're talking about this, because I think that we are right here breaking down that stigma and that belief that in an abusive relationship, one partner is silent. And I think that I'm so glad we're talking about this, because I was so noisy. I would fight him back. I would emotionally fight him back. Sometimes I would physically fight him back. Like if he put his hands on me, I would be like, don't you fucking dare touch me like that. I would fight him back. The whole thing was, like you said, me trying to get him to take accountability, to logically see the truth, to take responsibility and to stop acting the way that he was. So it was very noisy. That's why the whole relationship became so noisy. And then he'd be like, you're a fucking psycho. Why do you shout at me the whole time? You're the reason that this is a toxic relationship. But it was so frustrating for me. I remember I used to just cry with frustration because I'd be like, you just don't understand what I'm trying to say. And it was really distressing. And I think it's crazy what you said about you losing your voice. That was obviously physically, you lost your voice through like overuse of your vocal cords. And I think I've referenced this on one of the toxic relationship podcasts before, which is that I actually have a scar like here on my neck, which you can see if you're watching this on TikTok or if you're watching this on video. And that's because when I was in my toxic relationship, I grew a lump on my chest here, and it was non-cancerous. They cut it out. I went private. They stitched it. And the next day, all the stitches exploded. It literally, they were like, we don't know what happened. Like, that should not have happened. And later, when I started doing energy work, I was told that my throat chakra was so blocked from being in an abusive relationship where I couldn't use my voice and my voice wasn't heard, that the energy in it caused the lump to grow. And then when it was removed, it caused the the stitches to split open. So of course, that's more on the psycho-spiritual side of things, on the spiritual side of things, which I know is not some people's cup of tea. But yeah, I just think that's so interesting that both of us had issues with our voice in toxic relationships.
Yeah. So the 10th sign that you may be in a toxic relationship and don't even know it is that you never feel heard or understood. You try your hardest in all the ways you know to explain your feelings, express your point of view, and your partner never gets it, never hears you. And then sometimes you act crazy as a result. Oftentimes when we act out, we act crazy. It's because we're not being heard.
And then they focus on us being the crazy one when actually we were crazy for trying to get them to hear us, see us, acknowledge their own behavior, acknowledge their own patterns, acknowledge the pain that they had hurt, acknowledge the pain that they had contributed to this, acknowledge the gasoline that they had thrown on the situation, on the cycle, so we didn't just take all of the responsibility for it. And I think that is part of a toxic relationship, is that sometimes you stay silent. Sometimes you just take it. Sometimes you're just like, if I just fucking take this, the argument will be over. We can just get on with real life and we can go back to the good times. That is the sign of a toxic relationship. But what's another sign of a toxic relationship is that fighting back, trying to use your voice constantly to justify your opinion. So I think one of my favorite things that's coming out of today's episode is that an abusive or toxic relationship doesn't always involve silence.
Absolutely. And one thing you have to ask yourself is this relationship bringing out the best in me? Is this the person I want to be? Am I showing up as my best self? And if we are constantly reacting to them or trying to be heard, and so we're not acting from a regulated state, the answer to that is probably no. We're participating in that toxic dynamic. So yes, great point. Okay, moving on. Another sign that you may be in a toxic relationship without even knowing it is that you believe you could never leave this person because they couldn't make it without you. They have bad mental health. They have an addiction. It's your role to stay in their life and make sure they're okay, take care of them. Or you have thinking like, they've done so much for me that I could never leave them. So you feel trapped somewhere and you're abandoning yourself because you're only thinking about what your partner needs.
Yeah, and I think that this is where it gets very difficult when you're trying to communicate to your friends why you're staying. And I think this is what drives the silence, is you're like, they'll never understand, because despite you communicating with the people that you love about their behavior, you're also trying to justify why they're doing it and why you can't leave. Whereas from the outside, it's objectively incredibly easy to see, this is toxic, this is unhealthy, you should leave. But when you're inside and trying to get to the middle of that Kinder egg or the Easter egg or whatever it is, the jam in the middle of the donut that is like the gooey, soft middle part of them, you're trying to get other people to understand that. And people outside of the relationship are just going to have no empathy for that. Like I think I mentioned either in this episode or the last one that I have a friend going through something similar, and I'm having to really be very actively trying to be empathetic to her situation because I really feel very little empathy, because for me, it is so clear that she is tolerating a very inconsistently toxic, upsetting cycle. And it's very hard for me to hold space for that for someone that I care about when you really care. You want them to be out of that dynamic, irrelevant of whether there are good moments or irrelevant of whether they love them too.
Yes. And I know you and I talked about adding to our ever-growing list of episodes, like an episode on how do you help somebody? How do you help a friend who's in a toxic or abusive relationship? What are the limits of what you can do? How to support them? Because it's a challenging position to be in for sure. Okay. Another sign that you might be in a toxic relationship and not even know it is if your partner criticizes you, puts you down, or even humiliates you, whether alone or with other people around. So this seems pretty straightforward. And many of us think like, oh, I would never tolerate that. But again, when you're in a relationship like this, you become slowly numb to some of these things that happen. So somebody disparaging your appearance, your weight, your personality traits, harping on what they perceive as your flaws, bringing up things in front of other people that are going to be embarrassing to you. These are all things that will never happen in a healthy relationship. Again, sometimes in a healthy relationship, you kind of make fun of each other in a cute way. Both people feel loved and seen. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about being criticized, belittled, and put down. That should never, ever happen.
Yeah, I think, again, this ties back to what is the intention behind it, because, you know, I always joke about my boyfriend snoring, and I do mention it in public, in passing. And I said to Terry, I really need to work on not doing that, because there is no intention behind it of being controlling or being manipulating or trying to make him feel demeaned or to feel smaller. It's just that genuinely, I think it's really funny at how it is so bad and it impacts my sleep so badly that, like, sometimes I will genuinely like walk into his workplace and I will look like a ghost and people will be like, how are you? And I will have to make a comment. I have to say, yeah, I'm not great. Like, slept for 2 hours last night between the snoring and the kitten attacking me all night. I didn't sleep very well. Sometimes I do actually ask myself, how does that make him feel when I say that? And I think it's really good just to reflect on what the intention is behind it, because, you know, I think what Terry's saying here is that often humiliating someone in public, their intention is to make you feel smaller. Their intention is to get you in line, to be the dominant person, to be the domineering person. Like, that is absolutely not what I'm doing with, that is absolutely not what I'm doing with the snoring. But I just think it's good to be aware, self-reflective of everything. Like, for me, I acknowledge that. Like, why do I make that comment? I think it's funny. Okay. Do I think it's funny? And because I need to have a comical way to explain to people why I look like this? Or is there any way that I'm finding this funny at his expense? Because that's not nice. If that is the driver, that's not nice. So I just think it's really, really important. Like, the sign of a healthy person is just to reflect on everything you do. You don't have to do it all day long, but yeah, if you see a repetitive cycle, if you see yourself making a joke more than once, making a dig more than once, asking your partner to do something more than once, I think it's just good to say to yourself, where's that coming from?
Absolutely. You're demonstrating characteristic of a healthy person, which is just considering your impact on other people and being self-reflective at times. Unhealthy people, toxic people, unhealed people don't typically do that. They don't know to do that yet. Okay, another sign that you might be in a toxic relationship and not even know it is if there are double standards in the relationship. Either your partner can do things and they're fine, but if you do those same things, you're in the wrong, or you have to do certain things to keep your partner happy, but the same rules don't apply to them. Those double standards are a really bad sign. There should be equality and reciprocity in your relationship. Another sign that you might be in a toxic relationship is you're made to feel that it's your job and your role to keep your partner happy at all times. They have to like what you're doing. They have to like what you're saying, how you're saying it. You get in trouble if you don't say something in a way that feels good to them. So if your role becomes tiptoeing around them, tending to them, keeping them happy, that's a sign that you are in a toxic relationship. Another sign that you may be in a toxic relationship without knowing it is if there's any sort of physical abuse, which can be things like pinching, pushing, grabbing, holding or restraining, hitting, kicking, throwing things at you, any kind of physical violence. If it happens once, you need to get out. It's not going to change. This is a sign that somebody has huge anger issues and is unable to regulate their own emotions and be a safe person for you in a relationship.
Yeah. Again, I think that there's this misconception that if they just punched the wall or they just threw your phone on the ground, like, they didn't touch you. And that is just, like, absolutely not the truth. I think that that is a very big warning danger sign. I think it also ties back to our point that we make excuses for people. You know, I have a friend who every time that she would try to leave, her partner would, like, absolutely, like, lose her shit. And then she was like, oh, but she has this awful abandonment wound. It's just her inner child, like, all of this stuff coming up. The truth is no, that's an unsafe person. That is an unhealthy person. And I have an abandonment wound as well. I used to be incredibly unsafe when someone would try to leave. I would lose my fucking mind. I would honestly be on the floor crying, please don't leave. And then maybe I'd get angry and then maybe I'd be upset. And so again, I'm not judging these people. I have been there. I've been in the wraths of that abandonment wound. It is horrendous. Your inner child feels like they're fucking dying, feels like they're being abandoned. You are back to being like 4 years old all over again when you're being left at nursery. I get it. But now, having done so much work, I also get that that should never, ever show up in the context of a relationship. And if it did now, from me or from my partner, I would be so profusely sorry and embarrassed. And I genuinely would be like, that can never, ever happen again. I don't think it ever would happen, but I just think it's so important to understand that that is not justifiable behavior.
Yeah. And I think you're also pointing out we can heal, right? So the things that we used to do that may have been automatic or may have felt like we couldn't stop ourselves from doing, we can learn a new way to respond to those fears and wounds, which is a really important message for people to hear.
And yes, we can heal, but that is not a justifiable excuse to stay with someone in the hope that they heal.
Yes. All right. We're almost to the end of this list. We have two more. So another sign that you might be in a toxic relationship and not even know it is if your partner starts to try to isolate you from friends or family. This could be physically or emotionally. They start to say things that make you doubt your connection with them. They start to belittle the people in your life. They start to create boundaries for you about when you can see them or if you can see them alone. They start to become, or they start to try to make you feel like they're your home base. They're the only ones you can trust. You need them, and you start to not rely on the support system you had in place before. Abusers want to isolate you. They want to make you dependent on them in many, many ways. This is a huge red flag.
I think it's so important that understanding the concept of like, I am your safe person. I am your safe space. I am your safe base. I think we see it a lot that people say things like, I'm just looking out for you. I'm just doing this for you because I love you. I'm just telling you shouldn't spend time with your sister because she's not a healthy person. She's holding you back in life. You shouldn't hang out with that person at work because they're going to interfere with your likelihood of you getting a promotion. And I've done this when I was younger. I didn't trust one of my boyfriends. I didn't like his friends. They were the kind of like, go out, cheat on their girlfriends, et cetera, et cetera. And so because of my wounding, I tried to control him. Now, yes, I probably had some justification around that. But my point is whether or not it was justified, it was the language that I used to justify it. It was always like slightly manipulative language. I just love and care for you. Like, I want you to flourish and to be around good people. You know, that guy, he's not good for you. The truth is that guy wasn't good for him, but it was the way that I delivered it, like trying to be like caring and like blah, 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 rather than just straight up saying, this person is an unhealthy person. I don't want him around my boyfriend because I want to be with a healthy person. You know, I think that's just like a nuance that I don't hear people talking about all too much.
Yeah, and I totally agree. And the other point I want to make is if your partner has these preferences or says, I don't like this person, or I think you see your family too much, what happens if you continue on doing the same things you always did? Usually in a toxic or abusive relationship, they're going to get angry. They don't like it when you don't do what they suggest you do. So that's the other piece of this. It's not just suggesting and planting the seeds. It's actually trying to actually control you. Okay, we are on to the final point. So another sign that you may be in a toxic relationship and not even know it is if there is unhealthy boundaries. If your partner is constantly needing to know where you're at, who you're with, there's surveillance. If they've done extreme things like putting a tracker on your car, or they need to see your phone all the time, if there's a lack of trust, and so they need full transparency all the time, and you need to continue to prove to them where you're at and who you're with. that is really unhealthy boundaries, and that turns into control over time.
I think it's also so important to understand like the much more gentle and like nuanced signs of this that we're talking about as well, because the tracker on your car is like a big one. Whereas I think there's also really small ones as well. Like, you don't have to share your location with anyone if you don't want to. You also can turn your location off if you want to. I mean, you probably shouldn't be. Like, you should just, if you want to share your location with your partner, I have my location shared. I never once would ever think about turning it off. I also never once would think, I mean, my boyfriend forgets that he even has it. He's like, hey, where are you? And I'm like, you could just look, you have my location. But my point is, you don't have to be forced to do anything. Like, if it works for you and you want to share your location, great. If it works for them and they want to share their location and you want it to, great. You should never be doing something because someone else is making you do it, telling you that that's what love is, telling you they're just looking out for your safety. You can also take it back at any moment. You don't have to share it. You could just share it for the night, for the week. You also could just turn it off after 6 months and say, hey, actually, I don't really like that. I prefer that we just communicate about where we are. You should be able to do that without your partner thinking that that's suspicious or like thinking that there's a reason that you're doing that. Do you think you agree with me on that?
I do. Your partner may feel like it's suspicious if it's a change, and that's something the two of you can talk about. But the point is, there's always room for setting new boundaries. There's always room for renegotiation of boundaries. There's always room for your feelings. In a toxic or abusive relationship, again, when you try to renegotiate these boundaries, set these boundaries, or say, I don't like that, you're probably going to be told that you're being selfish, you're being unreasonable. It's going to go back to all the things we just talked about. So that is a key difference here.
Yeah. And I think, again, it's like you said, you can renegotiate these boundaries based on how you feel. So it might be that actually, if you have an anxious attachment style, that you find yourself looking at your partner's location and actually you don't want to do that. You know, that's a cycle for you that is obsessive or potentially dangerous. And actually, you are working on breaking and healing those cycles. So for you, it's healthier to turn off your location and to turn off their location. Have that discussion. Same thing with red receipts. I don't care about any of these things. I have mine off. If my partner was to say, I want them on, I'd be like, well, why do you need to know when I've read your message? Because you know my intention is I will always message you back when I have a moment, whether that's right now or whether it's in an hour, blah, blah, blah. So I think it's just about communicating your feelings as you renegotiate those boundaries and acknowledging that a healthy person will engage with and hold space for the renegotiation of a boundary because they want you to feel happy, safe, secure, and healthy. A healthy partner will want you to work on healing your anxious attachment style. They won't want to fuel it because their objective is that they want to have your location all the time. So they're going to force you to have their location or double standards. They want yours, but they don't let you have theirs, like blah, blah, blah. I think just acknowledging that the feelings underneath this are a really important way of prefacing those discussions when you have them with your partner.
Absolutely. It comes back to that foundation of respect, reciprocity, friendship. Those three things are so important. They're so foundational in a relationship. And none of those things can be present if any of these things on the list are showing up in your relationship. And to your point that we said we were going to close on, so many people, again, like people usually with lots of empathy, look past these abusive or toxic behaviors and dynamics because, like you said, they see the good. They see the good in there and they get moments of good in the relationship. But all of these signs that we've talked about are damaging, they're dangerous, and they will have a huge impact on your mental health and well-being. You cannot grow and feel safe and happy and healthy in a relationship where any of these signs are showing up. So do not date somebody's potential. Do not feel like you should stay with someone because of those good moments. And recognize, again, that doing your own work will help you uncover if you're addicted to those good moments, and it leads you to just kind of grin and bear all the rest of it, because that's a pattern that is really having a negative impact on you.
Yeah, and I think that understanding the neurobiology alongside the psychology of a toxic relationship is so, so important because, like Terry said, you become addicted to the highs, the intermittent dopamine hits of that, whilst also being able to withstand the lows, which in itself are stressful and full of cortisol, but that our body can kind of get wired to. And Sarah explained on, I think it was episode 88, the biology of the spark and the ick, is that in a healthy relationship, you have a tolerance for a low baseline. It's low baseline of stress, much more oxytocin, you're in a partnership. Whereas when you're in a toxic relationship, potentially your nervous system is just reacting to the same highs and lows of stress and inconsistency, love and silence that you maybe experienced in childhood. So I think there's definitely some interesting angles there. But we are really up for time. I feel like we could just go for hours and hours and hours, but I know that I need another coffee. So it's time to wrap up when I start to get brain fog. I'm like, oh my God, we've been on here for too long. I'm going to start making no sense and wasting everyone's time. But this has been a critically important information, but this has been a critically important episode. There are so many things in here that I think go overlooked in the general wider discussion around toxic relationships. I hope you felt seen and heard and loved by this episode. We are doing this because we don't want you to tolerate bad behavior. We're not calling you out. We're just showing you the truth about what is going on so you can acknowledge, okay, this thing that I've called love, this thing that I've called passion, it's actually got elements of abuse intertwined into that. And it might only be 10%. It might only be 20%. It doesn't matter. 10% of toxicity in a relationship is a toxic relationship. And I think that that is my final point.
Yeah. And I'll just agree with that. 10% of any of these behaviors are going to bring you down over time. Being in a toxic relationship is bad for your mental health. It's bad for your well-being. It's bad for your sense of self. It is harmful to you. And anytime I hear about someone tolerating this kind of treatment, I just want to reach out and help her understand, or him, that they are amazing, they're worthwhile, they're wonderful, they're deserving of healthy love, and they just need to start doing some work until they know that deep at their core. And it's totally possible.
It's totally possible, coming from the girl that's been in more than one deeply abusive, loving, in inverted commas, relationship. The healthier I got, the healthier my relationships got. And that all started the moment that I stepped inside the therapy room. I really would not have been able to get there without a therapist lovingly, gently guiding me to the conclusion of how I would tolerate that kind of behavior, but call it love. Mic drop. Sad mic drop. Poor little inner child mic drop. Thank you so much. This has been incredible. As ever, if you want to get more of Dr. Terry Mack, you can head over to our website. We have a number of incredible ebooks. They are 30, 40 plus pages long. They are full of diagrams, bullet points, self-reflection exercises. We help you understand the psychological and neurobiological cycles of what is going on, how your cycles formed, and how you ultimately can break them. Our shop is linked in the show notes. You can also get access to Dr. Terry in the house in our private Ask a Therapist room. You can sign up to be a premium subscriber through the show notes as well. You also get access to a ton of previous bonus episodes that we've recorded. So if you want to get there faster, if you want to heal deeper and quicker, we've got the solutions for you. So thank you so much, Dr. Terry. Critically important info. I love you dearly, and I will see you very soon.
Thanks, Louise. Love you too. Bye, everyone.